98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Weekly Blast.
There are six big differences between Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, and they're all stashed away in a safety deposit box. One has seven Super Bowl rings, and the other has one. But observers note another big difference between the two, namely that Brady has a ton of personal relationships because he works at it, because he makes it a point to know and to lead everyone on his football team, especially on offense. Meanwhile, Rodgers is more of a lone wolf with a history of struggling with relationships, and the difference can be seen in the really big games when strong relationships can show up on a football field in the moments of stress, in the moments that require trust. And that brings us to Kyler Murray. Up until now, it feels like Murray is more in the Rodgers mold, an introvert who does not trust easily, a guy who doesn't have an abundance of relationships, and that is something entirely in his control. It's also something he can change right now, in the offseason, by connecting with teammates, by building relationships, maybe by hosting them all at some location somewhere down the line, and maybe when the games begin again in Arizona, Cardinals players will begin to look at Murray the way the Bills gravitate to and absolutely adore Josh Allen, or the way the Bengals are beginning to feel about Joe Burrow, because this stuff matters in the NFL. And all it requires is that Murray grow up, grow out, and grow the mindset of a real football leader, and in the process, become less of a baseball player. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at Chapman BMW in Chandler, at Chapman BMW on Camelback. Shop online at ChapmanBMW.com.
Is this what you suggest Kyler Murray needs to do? Is it one of those easier said than done kind of things?
Maybe.
I'm fascinated by the subject of leadership, especially as it pertains to sports. But even outside of sports, I think it's a fascinating topic. There are people that believe that leaders can be developed. And, you know, there's examples of that. I happen to believe that many leaders are born that way. I don't think necessarily if you're not a born leader, it's a foregone conclusion you can become one, because it's pushing yourself out of a comfort zone. Now, it's weird when you think about that, because it seems like a prerequisite for the job to be an NFL quarterback or a successful one. But that's not 100% across the board true. There's guys that struggle with leadership. There's guys that struggle with relationships. You know, we've referenced that New York Times piece on Kyler Murray a couple times that came out right before Christmas, you know, where he talked about where it was mentioned that he doesn't like to watch film. He did talk about being an introvert, not being seen, kind of, you know, being his own guy. There's a reason for that in his eyes and his life, and that's because what makes him comfortable. The great ones that have that, whatever the discomfort may be, the great ones are able to overcome it.
Yeah, and I think you bring up something fascinating, and that is it doesn't come easy to Kyler Murray, yet it's something that you have to have if you're going to be great at your job in the NFL playing the position of quarterback, because you have to lead. It's part of the job, and you can't really be deficient there, or it's going to show up on the football field. There was an anecdote specific to Aaron Rodgers over the weekend. I forget what teammate it was, but it wasn't Davante Adams. He threw the football, somebody dropped it, and Aaron Rodgers froze him out the rest of the game. Just didn't trust throwing him the ball anymore. Kind of took on this persona of, okay, I'm the victim again. I can't trust you. You're not doing your job. And the real leaders do just the opposite. If a receiver drops the pass, you go right back to him. You lean on that relationship.
If that receiver sucks.
Well, that too.
And if you have Davante Adams.
Well, there is that. So I just think that this is something that Kyler Murray is going to have to work on. I was reading something about Joe Burrow and what he did to his teammates over the weekend by continuing to play on while getting sacked nine times. And it sounds like, yeah, that must have really been tough for him to do. But you think about a quarterback, and when you get hit that often, there are people raving about how Joe Burrow never took his eyes off what was going on down the field, despite being sacked nine times. And this is a guy who was coming off of ACL surgery, and he was keeping his eyes downfield. That brand of leadership tells your teammates that dude is doing everything to win this game. And I got to do that too.
Yeah.
And that dude believes in us so much that he is sacrificing for all of us. And these are little areas that, like I said, it's not easy for Kyler Murray, but he really does need to grow in this regard, Vinny, in my opinion.
Well, I'm not nitpicking what you just said. I don't think that's a little area. I think that is a major point of improvement. But I also don't necessarily buy into that being related closely to relationships or related closely to...
Yeah.
There are leadership qualities. Can Kyler Murray continue to be an introvert yet show those qualities on the football field when, you know, there's guys trying to kill him?
Mm-hmm.
Becoming unflappable in the face of pressure might be the best quality a quarterback can have. And we're seeing a guy like Joe Burrow in his second year as a starter thrive because he has that. He's more advanced in that realm than what Kyler Murray is. And I know there was local discussions bringing up the 9-sack game. The Titans were all over Joe Burrow. You know, they brought him to the ground 9 times. That doesn't tell you how many times he was hit or how many times he had to avert his eyes or look out for danger coming his way.
Mm-hmm.
And what would happen if Kyler Murray was sacked that many times? What would he look like? Well, I don't think it would look the same.
No, it would not.
Not right now.
I can guarantee you it wouldn't.
And that kind of leads back to the earlier discussion that we had is, Kurt Warner talking about having that short memory. How do you do that when your gaffe and what's lingering now over Kyler Murray's head this offseason is that disastrous performance in L.A., that the whole world was watching, and quite honestly, one of the more embarrassing plays that any player put forth this NFL season.
Yep.
That hangs until you give people a reason to think about something else. So I don't know if he can have the short memory now because he doesn't have the immediate opportunity to atone for it. You brought up the fact maybe it's a good thing that happened now and he can stew over it in the offseason and it can drive him not to make those same mistakes and improve in those areas that he did prove to be deficient, especially in that football game.
Well, and again, I think that let's go back to that piece we've talked about in the New York Times that ran a couple days before Christmas where the whole theme was how easy this is for Kyler Murray and how he feels blessed to have the cognitive skill to not have to watch film. It was just dripping with self-confidence. And I think that game, to me, exposed some of that and exposed where there are some weaknesses in Kyler Murray and how that stage absolutely overwhelmed him. These are all things that I think that I hope he marinates in a little bit. I like you, once he gets on the football field, I don't want him thinking about mistakes. I want him moving on to the next play at all times.
Yes.
So having a short memory is essential once the season begins.
Mm-hmm.
But from now until then, you know, this is the time when football players, basketball players make substantive changes to who they are as athletes. You don't do it in season. You do it now. And certain players treat the off season as just a maniacal pathway to be better next season. Some athletes want their downtime. Just, hey, I'm good. I know what I can do. So it's another very important offseason, Vinny. Maybe the most important offseason in the history of the Cardinals.
They all are. I just wonder.
I've been saying that every year for 20 plus years.
How much natural tendencies can be overcome with that training, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because nature is nature for a reason. Everybody's got their own nature. And we've seen 3 years of Kyler Murray's nature as an athlete. Sometimes it's brilliant, sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that is overcomable? Is that a word? Overcomable?
Yeah, no.
Surmountable?
I think there's a ton of personal growth left for Kyler Murray and influencing other people. Just the love the Bills had for Josh Allen at the end of that game. I know that's exceptional. You don't have to be that.
Like we can admit here, just from our viewpoint, which is limited, it's different. But we don't know that those connections aren't somewhat healthy with Kyler Murray and his teammates.
They might be. And there might be some, but he's clearly not at the level of these other guys because you can see it.
I think that's fair. Okay. You can text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, Devin Booker goes off again last night, 43 points in Utah. But is that scoring output a bit of a double-edged sword for the Phoenix Suns? We'll get into that next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
FM, Arizona's sports station. Dan Bickley, Vince Marotta. Bickley and Marotta Mornings.
Booker directing traffic, starts to dribble, penetrates on O'Neal, stops his dribble, fadeaway 20-footer is nothing but the bottom of the net for Booker, and the Suns are up 7, 101-94 with a minute 20 to go.
I'm just having a lot of fun, man. I know I keep saying that after every game, but, you know, I don't take these moments for granted. You know, coming into a tough Utah building and it, you know, being rowdy in here and being short man and still coming up with the win, and you know, that's what it's about. So, you know, you're going to see a smile on a lot of our face. We were just talking about, you know, how we even come out on the court before the game. Like, we all, you know, we fool with each other. And, you know, when it's time to lock in, we lock in.
It's Devin Booker following his 43-point performance last night in Utah. 16 of 28 from the floor, hit 2 of 6 three-pointers, 9 of 11 from the free throw line, added 12 rebounds, 4 assists, and a steal. Suns get their 8th straight win. They beat the Utah Jazz 105-97, second time in 3 nights they beat the Jazz. Did it in both Phoenix and Salt Lake City. You know, piggybacking off Devin Booker's quote there, this is a team that's having a lot of fun. I don't know if you saw the video from one of the recent home games where there's always a camera on the Suns before they come out right before pregame in their huddle where they're getting all pumped up. And JaVale McGee is usually the guy that's leading the inspiration, if you will. And he led them out. He breaks the huddle. He runs out onto the court. Everybody just kind of left him hanging. He ran out there on his own. And they stayed
That's
back.
Funny. Okay.
And they have a good laugh, and they go out and they win the game.
Okay.
So they are having a lot of fun. I find it interesting, and I know you brought this up, and I'm not calling out Eddie Johnson when I say this, but Eddie Johnson, during a recent telecast when the Suns were on their road trip, said, hey, the days of Devin Booker scoring 45, 50 points, those, you know, those are few and far between now. Since then, he's had a 48-point game and a 43-point game, and a lot of it due to necessity. But I know there's people that feel like, hey, Book getting his numbers to that degree, it's fun to watch, but is it great in the big picture offensively for the Suns?
This is not just a Devin Booker issue. This is an issue with any high-volume scorer.
Sure.
That if you've got a guy who goes off consistently and is posting big numbers, what tends to happen, what can happen, is that the rest of the team starts watching. And then the rest of the team may or may not become disengaged offensively, which causes them to become disengaged defensively. And then as a result, a player putting huge scoring performances together can sometimes have negative effects on the team. I remember one time vividly back in Chicago, Michael Jordan scored 55 in a game, and his teammates were complaining about it afterwards. Not on the record, but off the record, complaining about it. And I thought, wow, we have gotten to a level of lack of gratitude in this city with this man is unbelievable.
Did they win the game?
They did win the game.
Okay.
But it was not a pretty game, and it was a close game, and it was a one-man show. And so I think Dwayne Rankin brought this up today, and I thought it was fascinating because what he pointed out is he saw a lot of ball watching going on in games 4 and games 5 of the NBA Finals last year, both of which the Suns lost, both of which Devin Booker scored 40 or more points. He scored 42 in game 4, 40 in game 5. And so he said he saw a little bit of that last night, and I can't argue with that because I thought I saw some of that too last night. I don't think it's a big deal now. I think right now it's all about get these wins any way you can get them, and it doesn't matter who's scoring what, because we do know when the games matter, the Suns' offense is going to look the way it's supposed to look. But the NBA Finals are a couple of games that their offense might not have been at peak because one guy was doing all the scoring. And this is not to cast blame. This is just a function of basketball.
Yeah, and you know, go back to those finals games in real time. I didn't certainly think that. And I think the offense bogged down more due to the fact that once Milwaukee got the wake-up call in the finals, their defense was different. And when you have defenders like Giannis and Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton's an underrated defender, it bogs down, and there's not much you can do about it. And I get what you're saying, and I get the points about ball watching, but you know, playoff basketball, which is where the Suns want to be and will be at the end of the year, and we're all hoping deep run playoff basketball again. Your offense doesn't flow like it does in January and February.
No, absolutely.
So to have Devin Booker with that experience to say, hey, we need a bucket, I'm going to put the team on my back. Last night I thought was interesting because, again, he got off to the early start and he was red hot. But again, the opportunity was there, and he jumped on it. And we've seen Devin Booker earlier in the year kind of ease into games. That has not been the case recently. Then in the fourth quarter of the game, where you have that double-pronged, hey, who's going to close things out tonight option, Chris Paul got the bulk of the scoring, 15 points in the fourth quarter. But Devin Booker's 6 points were enormous. And there was a time when the offense had really bogged down, even with Chris Paul taking over, where Booker hit a jumper and you're like, okay, everything's going to be fine. I see both sides of it, but I do enjoy watching Devin Booker operate when he's got that look in his eye or that feel, that confidence that he had early last night. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy who leads the league in scoring, but he's capable of it, and that's a good thing to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't, no argument there. The things where the offense began to break down is, as we pointed out earlier, is, you know, if Devin Booker is in the zone and now he's got the ball and he's holding it and he's waiting for guys to clear out, now you get guys who, and I'm not saying this did happen, but now you've got guys who, it's not resentment, but it's close. Because guys want to touch the basketball, even and they make exceptions when a guy is smoking hot. But guys don't stay red hot for the course of games, and that's the point. So, at what point in time do you let the offense kind of get back to the organic flow? It's a balancing act. Every team with any prolific scorer has had to deal with that balancing act.
Yeah, the only issue I really have as it's currently constructed is we've talked so much over the past year plus, and especially in the playoffs last year. And it's not like the Suns run a ton of plays from Mikal Bridges, but when he gets the opportunity to be more involved in the offense, you know, he's always going to bring it defensively, but that usually means good things for the Suns in terms of outcome.
Yeah.
Now they're winning these games anyway. And we've seen Bridges be heavily involved offensively. And last night, again, not so much the case. Would it have been easier down the stretch had there been more movement? I don't know. You hit on it when you said the most important thing is stacking up as many wins as you can. And they're finding
right now,
different ways
even
to
matter.
Do
it. Yeah, no. It really doesn't. This time before the All-Star break, these are the doldrums. Players just want to get inside this break so they can get out of the break and they can see the finish line. That's what they want.
Get ready to see your favorite breweries again as the Arizona Strong Beer Festival returns on February 19th at Bell Bank Park in Mesa. Tickets are now on sale, but you can win a pair by visiting the contest page at ArizonaSports.com. Coming up next, it's that time of year where we're wondering about players' futures. Will they come back? Will they retire? Well, one big name made it official today. We'll tell you who, what he said next. Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
I don't know how to put into words what the game of football has meant to me and what a blessing it has been. While I know with confidence I have given my all to the game, I am overwhelmed with gratitude for all it has given me. A boy from Findlay, Ohio with NFL dreams, developed in Oxford at Miami University, blessed with the honor of 18 seasons as a Pittsburgh Steeler and a place to call home. The journey has been exhilarating, defined by relationships and fueled by a spirit of competition. Yet the time has come to clean out my locker, hang up my cleats, and continue to be all I can be to my wife and children. I retire from football, a truly grateful man.
We belong together. And you know,
Ben Roethlisberger going the boys to men route, hitting the end of the road today. I know I did this to tug at your heartstrings, Vic, because I know you're broken up over the official announcement.
Yeah, huge fan, Vinny, huge fan.
It began, look, not a surprise. There was the talk of this is Ben Roethlisberger's last game at Heinz Field. Then they made the playoffs, and then going into the playoffs, this is Ben Roethlisberger potentially his last game. We knew it was coming. A lot of people think it was long overdue. And the Ben Roethlisberger place in recent NFL memory, it's one thing in Pittsburgh, and it's another thing, I think, pretty much everywhere else. He's beloved there. Understand why. He's been there almost 20 years as their quarterback. He's delivered Super Bowl titles and been a really good NFL quarterback for a long time.
Yeah.
Outside of it, due to that, there's an anti-Pittsburgh Steelers bias in a lot of places, certainly. I have that as, watching the Steelers beat the Cardinals in the Super Bowl in painful fashion and Roethlisberger behind it. But, a lot of the off-the-field missteps by Ben Roethlisberger at a certain point in his career, a lot of people never got over, and I'm not saying they should, but he's not well liked outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
No. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I don't know if you saw this, but Mike Singletary told Dan Pompey of The Athletic that he once vetoed a trade for Ben Roethlisberger, that the 49ers, namely owner John York and Jed York and Trent Baalke, in 2009, told Mike Singletary they had a deal in the place for a trade with the Steelers to get Ben Roethlisberger to San Francisco, and Mike Singletary claims he vetoed it. Quote, I'd been telling the team I wanted a team of character. I felt I had to be true to that, but if I could do it again, I'd do it differently, end quote. Now, some people are questioning the veracity of that, because why would Mike Singletary have veto power?
Well, why would Pittsburgh trade Ben Roethlisberger? Wasn't that the year after the Super Bowl?
Again,
that Super Bowl was in 2009.
This was after the lawsuit that came in Lake Tahoe of Ben Roethlisberger sexually assaulting a woman. And at that point in time, maybe the Steelers were looking to get rid of him. I don't know. I don't know if it's true or not. I just thought that was interesting. Ben Roethlisberger, I will say this. He's a guy that delivered two Super Bowls to Pittsburgh, so that's something, right? He beat the Seahawks and he beat the Cardinals.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you bring multiple Super Bowl championships to a city, you've done your job.
Even though he was awful in that Seahawks Super Bowl.
Yeah, both offenses were terrible in that Super Bowl.
Yes.
And then I've also said this, too, and I believe this. He is such a great fit of quarterback and culture of the city. He fit Pittsburgh perfectly.
Yeah, because we know if Pittsburgh, they like to put French fries on their sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
If you cut Ben Roethlisberger open, French fries would
come out. So yeah.
It's a giant potato. I've said it at time and time.
It looks like it kind of does.
It does.
But you better not be dissing those sandwiches, Vince. Because
I would never.
Okay, I was like, I will correct you on this one.
The Premonti
Delicious.
Brothers.
Delicious. Yes.
That's your
jam? Or Giordano Brothers. Let's go.
Brothers. Gotta put. I heard they're taking it very hard in Pittsburgh, though, the retirement. Have you heard any of some of the talk?
Dade, why don't we go on a day now? We don't got no QB. Ben Roethlisberger's going to retire. What's he going to do? Dude, it took a long time for between Bradshaw to Roethlisberger. There were a lot of lean years in there.
It's so good. It's so excellent.
But you're right, though. He's sort of like the... probably like the hardest to tackle quarterback.
Oh my
that
goodness!
You could think of right
when he was in his prime, and still, I mean now, but when he was mobile for a big guy to be as mobile as he was. But I agree with you, Jarrett. I don't think there was ever a quarterback that was harder to bring down just because of his physical stature and strength mixed with the mobility. I don't think we'll ever see it again.
People just bounced off him.
He was sort of the prototype for Cam Newton.
True,
was a with, similar
without the speed and athletic ability. But
isn't that right, Darnell Dockett? Darnell Dockett.
Dockett got him three times.
Was an inch away from a fourth sack that would have ended that Super Bowl. I mean, right there.
Thanks
if you go back
reminder.
And watch that, it was like 2nd and 20. And, if you want to talk about a near miss in Arizona sports history, that is right at the top of the list.
Oh, yeah.
Then it would have been 3rd and 36. Steelers would have probably converted that.
Yeah, probably.
Right? Francisco.
We all would have blamed
Aaron Francisco
for it.
Would have blown coverage somewhere.
The guy who played quarterback for the Cardinals in that Super Bowl, Kurt Warner, he was on with Wolf and Luke yesterday. And we spent the beginning part of this week, and it wasn't just us, raving about last weekend, the quality of the games last weekend. three walk-off games in the divisional round, plus the epic between the Chiefs and the Bills. Kurt Warner told Wolf and Luke, it wasn't that great.
I was talking to, you know, some people that we've got this impression that this past weekend was like the greatest weekend of football, you know, we've ever seen. And, you know, I love that. I love that for our sport. I love that because I still cover the sport and I'm passionate about it. But if you go back and watch the games weren't even that great. But the last 5.5 minutes in overtime of that game was special.
You're going to tell me the games over the weekend weren't great? I absolutely thought they were it was the best weekend of football.
The Titans didn't play very well. They're turning the ball over, you know, and they were down 10 points, and then Cincinnati couldn't really finish, and they came back. The Rams were up 27-3 until they fumbled the ball four times in the second half. You know, that Buffalo game was a good game. I mean, it was like 23-21 until 5.5 minutes to go, but it wasn't this incredible, you know, slugfest up until the last 5.5 minutes of the game. The Packer game was just a mess.
Oh, it was it was a beautiful mess.
All right, you're on side Wolf or side Warner? A lot of it depends on how you...
Intellectually, I heard this argument in real time, and intellectually I thought, Kurt might have a point here. And yet, watching them and experiencing them, I felt just the opposite.
You know what? Because close games don't necessarily mean good games.
No.
No, I told you, though, I dozed off. I fell asleep in the recliner watching Rams-Bucks when it was 27-3. What we do as sports fans, and I'm not blaming anybody because I do it as well, you determine how great the game was by how great the finish was.
And they all were so close that they ended on the last play of the game. So when the game ended, you were like, wow, what an ending. That was a great game. Where I guess Kurt Warner, when you're so entrenched in football and you actually examine every play in the entire game.
Yeah. He's got a point. But also, again, going back to that Super Bowl against the Steelers, that's why I don't think when there's the annual ranking of the greatest Super Bowls of all time, mm-hmm. I don't think Cardinals-Steelers is ranked high enough because I do think that that was a great game all the way through. How many great Super Bowls can you name where there was such a pivotal, momentum-shifting play right before halftime?
Yeah, that was just
It wasn't awful. All just about the finish, where Larry Fitzgerald gives the Cardinals the lead, and then you got the memorable drive by the Steelers. There was first-half plays that were so impactful to that game, I don't think it gets enough credit for being, in totality, a great game. Right. But I see it both ways.
Yeah.
A great finish can erase a lot of numbness before that.
And I think I had some bias because I was watching Tom Brady get his backside handed to him, and I was watching Aaron Rodgers get his backside handed to
him.
And I was like, okay, mainline that into my veins. Thank you.
That's fair. Coming up next, we'll have our weekly check-in with the head coach of Arizona State basketball, Bobby Hurley. That's next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
This is the Sun Devil Fast Break with ASU men's head basketball coach Bobby Hurley. The Sun Devil Fast Break is presented by Arizona Ford Dealers.
Yeah, Sun Devil's getting ready for the first of two meetings against the Arizona Wildcats. That'll happen Saturday, 12:30 tip at McHale Center. And here to talk about that and ASU basketball, their head coach, Bobby Hurley, checks in for his weekly visit on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
Good. Good morning, guys.
Good. The last time we spoke, you were coming off of the win over Utah. To get a close win, I think that put a lot of confidence into your team. Since the last time we spoke, you had the Stanford game, close loss, and the USC game the other night. We'll start with the Stanford game, and I know it was frustrating. It was frustrating for fans to watch that. I know that was frustrating for you personally and for your team, but I thought there was so much positive that came out of that game. Jalen Graham's performance, fighting back from a deficit on the road with adversity built in. I mean, how proud of you were you of your team's performance against Stanford?
Well, I mean, I thought it was as good as we played all season. So it was, especially on the offensive end, shooting over 50% from the field for the game was, places we really haven't been in many times this season. So to see us perform that way on the offensive end of the court was great to see, to have 12 more made field goals than our opponent is, you know, that's a pretty dominant, you know, offensive performance. And, you know, was pleased to see that, you know, to see the way Jalen Graham, you know, continues to develop and play at a high level. And, but we had major contributions from a number of guys. You know, DJ Horn picked up his third and fourth foul with 18 minutes to go in the second half, and he missed a lot of time because of that, and scoring 18 points in 22 minutes, you know, was pretty special. But we had really good balance on the offensive end of the court.
All right, how did you how has time helped you process everything that happened post game with the suspensions? Listen, I've been here a long time, and Pac-12 officiating can be mind-blowingly bad. The free throw discrepancy that game was hard to explain. Where do you go with all the rest of the stuff, Bobby?
I really can't talk about it, guys. And again, my thoughts are that, you know, at the moment I have peace of mind, I have peace in my heart. You know, I had enormous regret that I was not able to be there for my team, you know, against USC, and even to see them come out and compete the way they did the first 15 minutes of that game. And, you know, we carried over the way we played offense versus Stanford into that beginning of the USC game. I just think we ran out of steam playing with seven guys and no head coach. It was a lot to ask going playing a very good USC team, and their size I think wore us down in that game. We couldn't effectively rebound as the game wore on, but we have a tough stretch and we got a lot more, you know, difficult games in front of us, and trying not to look back and just want to move forward.
We're in a time, and we're talking with Bobby Hurley, the head coach of ASU. We're in a time where head coaches are away from their teams for different reasons, a lot of it COVID related. But how can you put into words how difficult it is to watch your team play a game where you're not in attendance and you can't influence anything?
I had very little time, and I'm, you know, we're talking with Coach Joel Justice and Jermaine Kimbrough about, you know, responsibilities that they ordinarily would never have going to play a game like that on short notice when you do get the word that finally comes down. And I thought they did an outstanding job of keeping the group together. And, you know, I was able to be involved in all, you know, preparation leading up to that game, shoot around, film study. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, sitting back at the hotel in the meeting room with, you know, with Jay Heath and Kamani Lawrence was, it was tough to watch, and you know, those guys felt horrible that they weren't a part of it as well. But it was surreal to not be there coaching the game.
Now, you've got a game coming this weekend, obviously against the Wildcats, and they're having the kind of season that I think has made a lot of ASU fans jealous and wonder how they can spin a season like that seemingly out of nowhere. I've had to explain to some of them that they're two completely different recruiting universes, if you will. Then I read a piece from Brad Sesmat yesterday who talked about how your basketball arena is 50 years old. I'm not asking you to criticize what has been given you, but what needs to be understood and what needs to be given to you to help better the playing field, level the playing field for you?
I think it's, you know, we've had enormous setbacks in COVID, and I, you know, and again, we've had injuries to key players, you know, the last 2 years, and, you know, we're getting more injuries. You know, for example, you know, Lonzo Gaffney is going to be questionable for Saturday. Now he got elbowed in the face versus USC, and we're in the process of, you know, trying to figure out if he's going to be available or not. So I should have more information on that as the day moves forward. So we've had a lot of adversity just dealing with all the stoppages and cancellations, postponements, injuries, and it's been a lot to deal with. You know, I'm hoping for a day that those things aren't in place. And, you know, where you play a basketball game and what our arena looks like, you know, that didn't change when we had 14,000 people there 2-3 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, rooting us on as we were a top 25 team. And, you know, I'm going to do everything that I could do humanly possible to get us back into that situation.
Bobby Hurley, our weekly guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. You mentioned Gaffney and his status. Will Kamani Lawrence be back on Saturday for Arizona, Coach?
I'm hopeful that he will, and we're optimistic that he will, and I'm just, you know, we're I got to see how he feels today. He's dealing with a non-COVID illness, so hoping he's better. And we did light work yesterday, and we're gonna ramp things up the next 2 days to get ready for Saturday.
One of the pluses that came out, and you mentioned the beginning, the start to the SC game. But another positive was seeing Marion Jackson getting going, hitting 5 threes, yep. 21 points season high. Is he back to where he needs to be in your eyes, Bobby?
He's getting there, and he played a really good offensive game, and we struggled in a lot of other ways trying to score against a very good defensive team. But it was good to see him see the ball go through the net again, and each game he keeps doing that. I think he's inching closer to be who he is and what we thought he'd be, especially on the offensive end. And he had a couple of shots in that first half too that were open that he didn't connect on. I mean, he could have been looking at a 30-point game. And yeah. So I think he's very close. I'm happy to see him continue to make progress.
Before we let you go, you get the game in Tucson Saturday. And I know we talked earlier this season about the stretch you guys were in, even in non-conference, how difficult it was. And I know it wasn't by design. There was a lot of shuffling going on. But when you go at USC, at Arizona, versus USC, versus UCLA, versus Arizona, I would be willing to bet, Bobby, there's not a team with a tougher five-game stretch of schedule anywhere in the country. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, you look at the Stanford game, and anytime you play a winning game and you put up those type of numbers, and, you hope that you could close it out and win a game like that, knowing what's in front of you. But, you just look at it every game and you take each game individually and you just want to get your guys ready to play and keep competing. But, yeah, I don't think from a metric standpoint that you could put together a schedule that could in a league that where you could have that many hard games consecutively. But, we're going to be up for the challenge and I know we'll be excited to play. These are the games that are the reason why you go to a conference like the Pac-12 and play. Competition like Arizona and UCLA and USC.
Well said.
Bobby, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you,
as
Bobby.
Always, best of luck in Tucson on Saturday,
thank
and we'll
God.
Talk to you next week.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Bobby Hurley, the head coach of the Arizona State Sun Devils, our guest as he is weekly here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. As we do daily, we're going to hit some social studies at Bickley_Murata. Next, Sarah Cazell will take us through it here on Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.